Hi! Welcome to Let's Go Kick-Ass Today. I'm your host, Vicky Carter. This is a monthly podcast where I chat to inspirational people from the fields of music, adventure, and culture. People who basically are really kicking ass and making their own rules in life. So if you want to feel empowered and inspired, you've come to the right place. In this episode, I chat to musician Tony Humphries, who spent a decade in the music industry, the passion that drives his music, mental health, and overcoming crutch behaviour.
I think social media has made it a lot tougher for people to just worry about the art. Mm. I think nowadays people worry about everything else before that.
I also chat to fellow travel lover and runner, Johnny Payne, the most relaxed runner you'll ever meet, who describes his journey from one marathon to ultra and why running is for everyone.
You know, just go out and do it for you. And if you enjoy it and if you get something from it personally, I wouldn't worry. It's easy to say, but I wouldn't worry, you know, about like thinking about what other people think about your speed or anything like that, because really running, you know, it's for everyone.
Finally, I chat to two incredibly kick-ass women, Georgie Rogers and Alice Smith, about their podcast, production company and series, as well as a platform which encourages future filmmakers and celebrates and champions trailblazing women.
I think we wanted to find women that were doing amazing things in quite surprising places.
Yeah.
And also women who were actively helping other women. That was kind of the remit.
First up is Tony Humphries. He talks about mental health, not only his own mental health, overcoming crutch behaviours and coming off his bipolar medication, but also mental health in the music industry. So you've been making music now for over a decade.
Oh.
What would you say that you've learned about yourself and your music that you hadn't known 10 years ago?
Oh, wow. Off the bat, what a great question. Wow. I think the more that I've written, the more that I want to explore. You know, topic wise and emotion wise and feeling wise, I want to be as honest and as real as possible. And I think hopefully in the 10 years that I've been sort of writing and doing this, I would like to think that I've kind of honed in on learning how to express that and mix that all up. And I'd like to be a kind of an artist that could potentially make you kind of laugh and cry in the same song. So hopefully in the 10 years that I've been doing this, I've managed to just kind of hone in on those types of things. But
do you think it's a confidence in yourself as a person or as a music artist that's allowed you to hone in on yourself more?
I don't know if it's a confidence. I think a lot of it probably stems from insecurity and feeling not confident and inadequate in many ways. But I think that when you write or you take that, you know, those insecurities and those feelings of inadequacy or whatever it is, and you put it on to a record or you do something creative with it, I think that starts to create confidence, you know?
And being honest and open, I mean, recently you posted on social media, it's been 7 months since you've come off your medication for bipolar. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Only heroin now, strictly heroin. Joke, that's a joke. I'm kidding.
You're always a joker. How have those experiences of having bipolar shaped you and your music, and how do you feel now coming off them?
I think that it has shaped me and my music in a huge way. It's been something that I've always struggled with. It's something that I continue to struggle with. And I think that music has always been an outlet and a place for me to be able to express all of that in a safe space. Safe space. Since coming off the meds, I feel a lot more, I'm just me. All my life I was on meds. So, you know, that I always wanted to get to a point where I felt like I could do this life without any chemicals altering my brain. And I'm finally at that point after a very, very long time. So I feel that sort of a lot clearer, a lot sort of sharper. And dare I say it, okay? I feel sort of, you know, okay in myself. So you know, when I was coming off my quetiapine, you know, I used to be on 400 milligrams a night. And, you know, I started realizing when 25 milligrams was just knocking me out. I was thinking, my God, you know, 400 milligrams is a lot to come down from. So, I think that it just, I don't know how much it's changed or affected the writing side of things, but I do know in general, I feel kind of a lot clearer, a lot more me, which I suppose can be good and bad, but
No, that's fantastic. I mean, looking more at mental health, 1 in 4 people have suffered some form of mental health issues or complexities. But looking at the music industry, I mean, we've lost so many incredible greats because of it. Chester from Linkin Park, Avicii, you know, Keith Flint from The Prodigy.
Yeah.
Why is it specifically the music industry that makes it so challenging for those who suffer with mental health problems?
Ooh, you're asking some really great questions. I think social media nowadays makes things incredibly tough for people who just want to create and just be artists. You know, like me and T-Big. T-Big's my drummer and producer. He's sat at the end of the table right now,
hey.
Being a lunatic. But, you know, we spoke about this, and we've spoken about this many times where, you know, I've been in a rehearsal with him or something, and suddenly I'm thinking, you know, I need to film this so I can post it. You know what's more important than filming it and posting it is actually rehearsing, learning the lyrics, getting the flows right. And we always kind of make that joke of like, you know, imagine if Kurt Cobain, when he was writing Nevermind, was suddenly like, oh, better record that riff and whack it out so people can see a 15-second clip on Instagram, you know. And then I think that can deter people from actually focusing on being the creative that they want to be. And I think as well, feeling like you have to potentially live your life on the internet, or you have to constantly be on the internet, and you know, you constantly have to be connecting with people, again, I think can add to a pressure. You know, then what's the engagement like? Are you, you know, you should be doing this, but you're not getting this back. And I think social media has made it a lot tougher for people to just worry about the art. Mm. I think nowadays people worry about everything else before that.
Right, yeah, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, of course you can create and network and collaborate and even have a community of people coming together that can support each other, but also you're looking at other people and how they're doing, and it's a competition and it's exhausting. You want to just create music and get your stuff out there.
I think if you're really passionate about something and you really live and love it and you breathe it and it's all you know, and you find yourself just naturally gravitating towards it and putting all your time and energy towards it, and you know, this something that you feel so strongly about, you want to make your whole life in a sense that you can live off it and take care of the people you love. If you're looking at a passion like that, then mental illness or not, you're going to go crazy at times. For sure you're going to go crazy, you know, because there are those nights that you will be in this, you know, again, regardless of social media, you know, again, if even, you know, you as a radio presenter, as DJ, as a host, like, think about all those hours, you know, all those late nights, all those times that you've been sat in front of a computer, probably literally driving yourself insane over something that no one else may notice, but because you're so passionate and you care and this is your work and your art and you're trying to convey whatever you're trying to convey, you're going through that like a maniac, you know what I mean? And that in itself, you know, those 2-hour nights, those 3-hour nights of sleep, you shoot up and you remember, you know, like, damn, I've got to do this, or an idea hits you or something like that. I think like, it's hard to switch off when that is all you know and love. So I think, yeah, regardless of whether you're sort of verified or officially mentally ill or not, I think if you really live and love something, I think it's going to drive you crazy at some point, right?
No, 100%. I mean, I've experienced so many ups and downs with my own life and my work, and that drive that you have, that creative energy that you're always striving for that goal. What advice would you give to someone who is only seeing the obstacles but is so passionate about something? How can they overcome this brick wall?
I think that you, one, need to believe in what you're doing in some way, shape or form. You don't have to think you're the greatest artist that's ever lived, but I think you need to believe in what you're doing. I think you need to have people around you that believe in what you're doing, that care about what you're doing, that care about you, and that want to challenge you, you know, that want to push you to be better. I think when you feel like you're just staring at a bunch of obstacles, try and take a step back, maybe with those people, and start to break down which one you can tackle and how. It doesn't all have to be at the same time.
No, that's solid advice. It's, yeah, setting yourself achievable goals so then it's easier in the future and yeah, more achievable, like you said. Going back to your social media post, a bit off topic now, you said that you were celibate for a while.
Yeah.
So how did that hinder or stem your creativity? I think it's just interesting because a lot of musicians tend to end up sleeping around, and that helps their creativity. So I was just wondering, how did that affect your music, if it did in any way?
I'm not sure. I kind of got to a point. There are three things in my life that I'm very aware that I use as crutches, and that has been food, sex, and weed. And I love them all with a passion, but you know, sometimes I, you know, I've had a tendency to use them to, if you'll pardon the image, with, you know, one of the things I mentioned, to fill the hole. So it's kind of like,
sorry.
Yeah, no. I was just trying to, I've just been aware of that, and the more therapy I've been doing, and I guess the more I've been kind of growing and evolving, if we want to use those words, you know, I've just started to, yeah, become very aware of those things. So I kind of got to a point where I just wanted to go, okay, right, I don't want to need anything. I don't want to feel like I need a joint. I don't want to feel like I need some sex. I don't want to feel like I need some food. I don't want to feel like I need any meds. I just want to feel like I need, you know, my heart and my head.
That's lovely.
You know, so yeah, so I went celibate and stopped smoking weed and just tried to shift my patterns. So for example, it's just quite funny. It's just like little things, like sometimes, you know, I was sort of feeling a bit overwhelmed with how I was feeling, and I think, oh, I'll just message a girl or something, or just start talking to someone. I you know, I would go, no, right, don't do that, because that's what you sort of automatically normally do. I don't know how to, you know, try and change the pattern. So I would, and there were, you know.
So what would you do instead?
Well, sometimes I would pop into the bathroom and stay there for periods of times. And other times I would play Xbox. Was it PlayStation 2?
PlayStation.
Yeah. And I'm not really a gamer, but is it Red Dead Redemption? Is that what it's called? Started playing that, started shooting cowboys instead of messaging, you know, just to kind of sort of try and shift that energy. But as a whole, I felt very focused and very clear-minded and very sort of upbeat and alert, and there was a lot happening, and it just felt good to not feel like I needed these things.
That's so good, congratulations. And that's wonderful that, yeah, you can really change your behavior and patterns and thinking. And it's so hard when for so many years you've been implementing that and you've been turning to that, you know, and then to do that. Yeah. I mean, I still have the same problem with smoking cigarettes. I smoked for 7 years, and now I occasionally do it, but as soon as I get stressed, I'm looking around, who smokes in the office here, you know?
Yeah, it's a go-to.
Exactly.
And
so
you've got to just try and break that pattern, and that's some of the hardest things to do, I think, you know, creatures of habit, us humans. Mm-hmm. So we go right back to it, and it's like, no, let me try and do something different to actually be able to break this physically or mentally or whatever, you know?
Maybe I need to get one of those small Game Boys in the office so when I'm stressed.
Just start shooting cowboys, yeah, it's fine, yeah, it works out. Red Dead Redemption, everyone.
So I've watched a couple of your videos. I know that you're a bit of a joker yourself, especially in your new single, Crazy Love, in the video. There's a blow-up sex doll. Mm. Why is there a blow-up sex doll? What's the significance?
It was a song about my ex-girlfriend, and we had a pretty intense relationship, hence why the song is called Crazy Love. And she was actually originally meant to be in the video, but we broke up. the day before, 2 days before, we had a bit of an episode, as we would, you know, regularly do. We were very consistent, and we broke up. So, you know, we had a day to figure out, oh damn, how are we gonna do this? And Blow Up Doll seemed to be seemed to be the reasonable choice. So we went with that, you know.
Oh gosh, yeah. It must be so funny for her, well, to think of her watching the video and being like, thanks.
Yeah, we spoke, and it was funny because she said, she was like, thank God you didn't use another girl. She was like, if you had used another girl, I would have. I was like, okay, I guess Blow Up Doll worked better.
Finally, where do you see yourself in 10 years? What can we expect from you in another 10 years?
I think that I'm just going to continue making music. I'm going to continue hanging around people I love, because I really, really, really love the people I hang around with. I'm very fortunate in that sense. I just want to continue growing and evolving as a human man, and just like being alive in 10 years would be really nice. But also, you know, not just sort of physically, sort of mentally, spiritually, truly just happy to be here and alive and present.
Well, Tony, I really hope you're alive in 10 years' time. And I really hope that I'm alive in 10 years' time. And whoever's listened to this podcast, I hope you're alive in 10 years' time. He gave some fantastic advice there as well, really highlighting how to break down things that challenge you, you know, break down those obstacles. If you want to check out his music, go onto his SoundCloud or Facebook, Tony Humphreys Music. Next up, the most relaxed runner I've ever met. He describes his journey from running one of the most renowned marathons in the world, 5 marathons later, and an ultra marathon all in 2 years. And when he describes that buzz you get after just completing one, it's Johnny Payne. So I'm here with Johnny Payne, a fellow travel lover, adventurer, and runner. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So I say fellow runner. Mm-hmm. You've been smashing it the last 2 years. How many marathons or even runs would you say you've done in total?
I've done 5 marathons. I don't know how many runs. Obviously, I've been running since the start of 2017, when I first got into London Marathon, and sort of targeted marathons as my kind of reason for running. You know, kind of having those targets, having those things to set myself to. So, yeah.
And what inspires you to run?
I think that's an interesting question.
Why do you actually do it?
Why do I run? I love, I don't know, it's a nice feeling when you're out running. You know, you have kind of like time to yourself, and you sort of just get into this rhythm, especially like when you build it up and you're doing your longer runs. You know, it's a nice way of like getting out and seeing places. I've gotten to know kind of like London better through running, or cities when I've been traveling. So it's a great way to get out and actually see places. I never thought that, you know, you could go out and you go to a city and you'd be like, oh, I'll just go and do a run around it rather than get the bus or public transport, which is great too. But it's a nice way to see places too.
Especially in London, you wouldn't really see, well, I see runners running around the city, but are there many green spaces for people to get out and about?
Yeah, I'm lucky because I'm kind of West London. So, you know, I can run down to the river and go, you know, any of the routes along the river is great. I can run down to Richmond or Kingston, or I can run the other way. I can run to Putney, and into London, up to Battersea, wherever. So for me, I love running by the river. It's great. And then you've got so many good parks, Gunnersby Park, Osterley Park out near me. So it's good.
Oh, beautiful. And it's so good to reconnect with nature and see the river, because it's so calming when you do that. Because if you're running around, you know, just in the city, I think, how are you running and stopping at traffic lights and just running on your feet?
Yeah, I think, that is a good thing about going somewhere like the river. You know, you don't have to worry about crossing roads and waiting for traffic and stuff like that. So, yeah, that is one big bonus of it. Or when I was training earlier in the year, I've been a bit rubbish over the summer, but, you know, doing a track session, making sure you get your fast runs in there, and then doing your kind of longer runs on the weekend that are, you know, just getting out the miles. I mean, I'm not an expert. I just do what I do and what works for me.
Well, you're more of an expert than I am. So what are you talking about? I mean, so you're building, so what are you building up the miles on the weekend? That's what you do. And then you're increasing your fitness during the week.
I think I say I've done 5 marathons. I feel like I only trained properly for one of them.
Okay.
Largely because of, either injury or just kind of loss of motivation or whatever it would have been that stopped me from feeling like I was ready to do that marathon. So I, last winter, I felt like I trained really well and actually mixed up my training. So I do like track on a Tuesday and do some hills as well. And just do like then general, like a mixture of slower runs where you're just building your miles and just making sure you're kind of covering all bases. And I felt like just that variety helped me improve for Manchester Marathon, which I did in April. I felt definitely more ready for that. And even though I hadn't done as many long runs as I wanted to, I felt like I was definitely fitter than I had been. And all that kind of like the sprint work, speed work just gets you, yeah, I think it just helps you improve all around. So
people always talk about, you know, it's a mentality thing. You've got to push your mind to get over your physicality. I mean, how real is that?
I'm probably quite bad at that. I'd say I'm too negative, like when it comes to doing races, especially some of the one, like, yes, some of them I've done, I've been, so, you know, telling yourself in the beginning that you're not ready for this, you can't do this or whatever. So I find that I'm probably too negative sometimes, but then doing those, actually completing it, is you then have that more of a sense of achievement because you're like, well, you've kind of overcome that, and in the race you've gone through so many inner, you know, battles in your mind as to can you do this, can't you do this, is something niggling, or, you know, like, is that my knee that hurts or does it not hurt, whatever. But you know you just kind of keep going, and then you make it to the finish and it's kind of like all worthwhile. So, but yeah, I think that's partly due to, again, being undertrained and not being ready. Whereas Manchester, I felt really a lot more calm because I just felt like I was in better rhythm and more ready to do it.
So what kind of obstacles do you overcome, like mentally and physically, and how do you do so?
I think the main thing, I guess, is when people have like niggles or injuries or problems, that changes your training. So, like now for in New York in November.
So you signed up for New York Marathon in November?
Yes.
That's one of like the top ones.
Yes. I set out that I wanted to do the six majors.
Which are?
Which are London, Berlin, Chicago, New York, Boston and Tokyo.
Wow.
And I've done three. So I've ticked off three and I feel like that's like the first half. And I'm really, really pleased with those. But I want to do like the second half better and hopefully maximize my potential a bit more.
So sorry, you've ticked off London, Berlin.
Yeah, London, Berlin and Chicago.
Okay. How were they in comparison with each other?
Good. All great races. I mean, London is incredible. The support you get is so, so good.
It's like the mecca of all marathons.
Yeah, it's just...
It's hard to get into though, right?
Very hard, yes. But I did it for charity. But London was brilliant. Again, it was my first one, so you don't really know what to expect. You know, there's so many, you have all these kind of like, well, for me anyway, I had like hopes and dreams of what I was going to achieve, how the race was going to go. But really, because I was undertrained, I didn't know how it was going to go either. So, you know, you just go into it. I loved it. It was incredible. It was extremely difficult. I got cramp like at mile 14, which is kind of bad. Yeah. So then I just kind of like hobbled my way to the end.
Well done. Crikey, powering through.
I was like, I'm as long as I could kind of keep moving slowly, I was like, I'm going to get to the finish. I want that medal. So I did it and I finished. And it was funny because I remember my family being like, you know, we were shouting at you, but you just looked so kind of chilled. And I was like, yeah, I was chilled because I kind of had cramp and couldn't really move any quicker. So I was just kind of like,
so much pain.
I was actually like, just trying my best just to like keep moving. Berlin was very, very cool. Just loved that city. It was a great city. First time I'd been there. Again, great support, really good race. And they're all pretty flat. And then Chicago was great. Great race. I was very tempted to pull out of that actually, because I had again an issue leading up to that with kind of like shin splints. So I thought about cancelling that and saving it for a year. But when you've booked, you know, you booked a trip and you kind of like built up to it, I went and did it. And it was a great race. It was a cool city.
So you managed to pull through with that injury?
Yeah. I still wanted to go and do it. I've sort of
I've signed up to it. Yeah, I'm not going to back down.
And I was like, I can't not go through with it. So
that was like me though when I went to Tromso for the Midnight Sun Marathon. Yeah. I was in so much pain, but I thought, well, I'll give it a go anyway.
Yeah, because it's just one of those things, isn't it? You kind of, I wasn't as like, if I couldn't have run, then you know, I obviously wouldn't have done it. If I physically couldn't move, then obviously I wouldn't have done it. But I was like, I could still run, I could still do it. It wasn't too bad.
Speaking of injuries, do you have one now?
Well, I hurt my knee because I went and did my first ultra a few weeks ago.
How was that? Congratulations.
Thank you. It was amazing. It's called Race to the Stones and it's 100K. And I did it in one day. I walked a lot of it. I ran, I hobbled, I shuffled. It's an amazing race. Again, talking about kind of like the mental aspect of it, you go from, like, a marathon seems long. I appreciate in a trail run, I was not going very fast at all. I was taking my time and you can kind of enjoy the scenery. It was stunning. It was a lovely day, good temperature. And you can kind of take it all in rather than thinking I need to get to the finish line kind of as fast as I can. You just sort of can take it all in and enjoy it.
Yeah, good. I mean, it's a real sense of achievement to do ultra. Do you think you're going to do any more ultra now?
Yeah, I'm actually, so New York Marathon will be the start of November, and then I'm doing Tribe Run for Love, which is at the end of November, and that's a 260K race, but it's split over 6 days. I mean, it's not a race. It's
what?
Just a run. So you basically effectively are doing just over a marathon a day. Yeah.
Sorry, you're doing one of like the biggest marathons in the same month as an ultra marathon, where basically you're doing marathons every single day for 6 days.
Yeah, in effect, New York's my training.
Crikey.
Hopefully, we'll just kind of see how it goes, see how if we're fit and take our time. And it's in the Azores, so it's in a pretty cool place, so we can actually just, you know, take in the scenery. And it's with kind of a small group, and it's to raise money for the Tribe Freedom Foundation, which is to kind of against modern slavery.
Oh wow, that's great.
And human trafficking. So it's a really good charity to be running for, and the whole event sounds awesome. So I'm hoping, yeah, just to get fit, and then we can go and enjoy that.
But this is what I love about this podcast is that, yeah, I speak to some people who are like the top of their game, but I also speak to people who have recently acquired this passion. I mean, it's been 2 years that you really started to focus on running, and you've gone from running, you know, one of the biggest marathons in the world to now running loads of marathons and ultra marathons.
Yeah, it's funny because I think I originally did London just to tick it off, and I always wanted to do a marathon, but just as a one-off experience. I wasn't really a runner. I always had a lot of pain from running just because I hadn't actually fixed issues with like strength, you know, strengthening my calves and different things. I hadn't actually, you know, if I went out and did a long run, I'd be like, oh, it hurts, I'm not going to go and run again. Or I hadn't got the right shoes, stuff like that. So because it kind of didn't go as well as I wanted it to, that kind of was like, okay, well, I have to do another one. And you get this weird bug. I always get kind of like, you know, you get holiday blues, you get kind of marathon blues, you know, because you've got such a build up to it. And then in the days after, you're kind of like,
oh,
okay, so what am I going to, you know, what am I going to do next?
It's a big time of your life as well. You spend a lot of time training for that big event. So then when finally it's over, it must be quite a shock. And what's been your favourite runs? The most scenic, the most one to you felt on top of your game and fun to run, or...
I did enjoy Manchester Marathon. That was great. I felt in really good rhythm and didn't feel like there was much pressure because it was, I just felt like I'd go and enjoy it. It was the first time in a marathon I met someone whilst we were running. There's a lady running next to me and we were basically running exactly the same stride.
Oh, wow.
Exactly the same pace for about a mile or two. You know, it was really funny because, you know, you don't often get that. And then she started talking to me. And my first thought in my head was like, no, don't start talking to me. Because I knew that, like, I don't know, you know, you just want to concentrate. You just want to kind of be thinking about what you're doing. Actually, it was one of the best things, I think, that happened. Because we ran together for about 8 miles, chatting about life a little bit. But it was great because it kind of took your mind off what you were actually doing. We kept together for quite a long time, you know, to about mile 18,
nice.
Which was really, really cool, really nice. And she actually finished, her name is Leah, and she finished like 4 minutes ahead of me. I was like, damn it. if only I could have stayed with her, I would have been 4 minutes quicker. But she was really strong at the end and pulled away and stayed, you know, stayed really strong. But it was nice, sent a little message and said, you know, well done. And it was really nice. A nice moment to have from a race, which you wouldn't expect.
Lastly, if you had any final words for someone who is, you know, embarrassed to go out running or didn't think they were good enough or wasn't sure how they do it, what would you say to them?
I would say, you know, just go out and do it for you. And if you enjoy it and if you get something from it personally, I wouldn't worry. It's easy to say, but I wouldn't worry, you know, about like thinking about what other people think about your speed or anything like that, because really running, you know, it's for everyone, isn't it? It's just about you going out and getting something from it, whether it's you want to improve your fitness, whether it's just good for your mental health, whether it's good just to have, you know, just to get, remove yourself from whatever it is, you know, go and run for a bit.
Well, there you have it. Running is for anyone and everyone. And even if you live in a city, you'll still be able to find spaces to run. So really, you've got no excuse. Finally, last but not least, is documentary film and TV maker Alice Smith and DJ, music broadcast journalist, presenter and voiceover artist Georgie Rogers. They talked to me all about their co-founded platform, Superwoman, the challenges of chasing your dream career, balancing life with work and beating imposter syndrome.
Superwoman is a platform, it's a production company, and it is dedicated to nurturing female filmmakers, but also telling the stories of amazing trailblazers across music and motorsports, politics, tech, adventure. And Alice and I started it over a kind of a chance meeting. She was staying at my house and we were having a little coffee, and I'd just come back from seeing Elsbeth Beard, who was the first British woman to motorcycle around the world, speak at an event. And I was super hyped by hearing her story and really, really inspired by it. And I came home and wanted to make a podcast about adventurous women. And Alice works in film and TV and docs. And suddenly we sort of share a cup of tea or whatever it was, and coffee, tea, whatever. We kind of brainstormed creating Superwomen, and then off the back of that we've made a series of short docufilms and podcasts, and that's kind of the starting point.
Yeah, pretty much. We kind of quite early on we got very kindly got sponsorship from a kit house, and that enabled us to offer opportunities to aspiring female filmmakers. So we really wanted to give women the chance to learn how to tell stories and use the kit. It's been amazing, hasn't it? It's been such a great journey.
So how does it work practically with the aspiring filmmakers? Is there a register they've signed up, or you open the books to them, and how did they get involved?
No, we literally put a post out on Instagram.
Oh, wow.
And then people that I knew kind of through TV, you know, some had never worked in film or TV before. It was literally their first ever time on a shoot. Others were kind of working on reception somewhere but wanted to, you know, get into production, wanted to get the chance to, you know, be on shoots but had never been given that opportunity. Others, another one, Rosie, is a really talented photographer, but she wanted to learn how to film. So she came along and she shot B camera on the first shoot and we were just blown away. It's been interesting watching these filmmakers kind of blossom, because we started this so long, well, it feels like ages ago, a year ago. And in that time, one of them has gone off and started her own YouTube channel.
Oh, wow.
Rosie's now training to become a cinematographer. Another one is, I think she's like going to train to become a VFX artist. So it's just really cool to see like how they've blossomed in that time. I don't know that we can take credit for that, but it's awesome that we were kind of there at the start of that. So yeah, feel very proud of that.
No, definitely. You've planted the seed and you've given them confidence and also provide an opportunity for them to develop as individuals. And you've seen over time, because sometimes it's so hard for women in the industry to be given opportunity to step aside from being a receptionist and showcase their skills. Looking at those key areas, you know, adventure, motorsports, tech, why specifically those areas? Is it your passions, or is it something that you felt those areas needed to be highlighted?
I think it's a bit of both. It was born out of, I'd recently got into motorbiking after months and months and months of talking about, I really want to get a bike, I want to do my CBT. And I was in the pub chatting to a girl who has a bike and rode, and she kind of tipped me off to this whole female scene, which is VC, sort of started by VC London, but in and around that and they are one of the people in one of the films in series one. And I'd gained a lot of kind of, I don't know, new friends and feeling of freedom and empowerment from getting a motorbike and kind of seeing this scene actually, you know, before my eyes. And that then led to seeing Elsbeth Beard speak at this event. And then that kind of tied into, oh, adventurous women. I love, you know, motorsports. Obviously, I work in music. That's my background. But then when we started it, we actually just felt that there's inspiring, brilliant women everywhere that maybe haven't had their stories told. So it then was just like, well, let's just box off tech and politics and everything that, you know, yeah, we're interested in, really.
Yeah, that's it. I think we wanted to find women that were in doing amazing things in quite surprising places.
Yeah.
And also women who are actively helping other women. That was kind of the remit, really.
Yeah, definitely. But those areas you've highlighted, I mean, are predominantly male as well. So it's wonderful that you pinpoint those and focus on those and showcase the incredible females that are in those areas.
With just on that,
yeah,
VC were the first, VC London were the first, and Queen Bee, who's an automotive vlogger and presenter in the car world, and Elsbeth Beard, that was sort of reaching out to them to get them involved. And then also there was Catherine Marks, and we've released the film with her, who is, she's a record producer. And I knew of her through my work because press releases would come in, and it was so rare for me to see a press release with a female producer on it. I just hadn't seen it. And so, yeah, it was definitely at that point where it was like, these women are working in such male-dominated areas, so let's shine a light on that.
Definitely, and it's so powerful. I mean, watching the first video of Elsbeth Beard as well, like, she is incredible. She's so kick-ass and cool. So no wonder when you walked away from that and you thought, wow, yeah, no, I do feel hyped. What are you hoping to achieve by creating these? Is it more celebrating and the success, or do you think in the future there'll be some kind of scheme where you can enrol more women and create more videos?
Yeah, hopefully all of that. I think, like in the first instance, like what we want to achieve with it is just have someone watch it and think, oh, right, I could maybe do that, or, you know, get an idea or be inspired. Definitely, you know, there's just so many of these stories, and we wish we had the resources to be able to tell them all. You know, we're just trying to grow it really and build up a network of filmmakers that then could, you know, independently go off and make their own films as part of this or something separately. So we really see Superwomen as a production company as much as a series, and that hopefully it will develop new talent and new ideas. And, you know, this is just the very, very beginnings. So, yeah, we're excited to see how it's going to grow.
Yeah, I'm excited for you. What's the response been like so far?
It's been pretty great.
Yeah, it's been really good. It's been amazing. I think just super positive. I think everyone that we know that has seen it, like, we had a launch event that went incredibly well. Just the response has been great. And I think it's now just, you know, trying to kind of push it and get it out to its audience, because the audience exists. It's just trying to reach them and connect it to them. So that's what we're trying to figure out.
Mm. And the audience isn't just female as well. We found
exactly
when we did the launch and we played the first film with Elsbeth, you know, it was a mixed crowd in that room at Red On when we did the launch and the panel that we did with some amazing filmmakers. And the reaction from everyone, guys, girls, was just like, wow, she's amazing, and what a story, and how well it had been told and come across on camera.
That's it. We're not, you know, these women aren't just there. They're not just there because they're women. It's they've got a great story. That's, you know, they're doing amazing stuff and they've got a great story. And that's why, you know, we hope that will resonate with anyone, not just women.
Well, yeah, it's empowering and inspiring. I was there at the launch party and the atmosphere was electric. There might be some people listening who think, oh, but, you know, they're just too embarrassed, or they're too shy, or they're not confident in their own skills and ability to just go out there and do it themselves. What advice would you give to them?
I think everyone feels like that, and no matter what stage of your career you're at, like, we both know this, like, you're always, like, pushing for the next goal, and you always feel a bit embarrassed and a bit like, you know, you're kind of an imposter, you know, trying to pretend that you're worth that next step. But I think it's just finding a network of people is really important, finding people who'll be your champion and who'll support you, and learning from others, you know, asking questions, but definitely just do it. I think it's going to be really painful and rubbish, and you're going to hate your work when you first start it. But that's kind of part of the process. And from the rubbish bits, you'll learn, you know, how to make good bits, and it'll just kind of come, I think.
And nurturing relationships, I think I've always had it in my career where I've met someone, whether they've been, you know, on work experience or they've been the boss of the company, and sort of nurturing those relationships. It's really funny how stuff comes around years later where, you know, a producer of a show when I first started in radio was then the boss of a station and then gave me a break, as was the case with XFM, or same with Monocle, a girl on work experience from Brighton Festival Radio, then got me in to do arts reviews. It's really funny how stuff like that comes around. And I think airing those ideas and actually bouncing off people, if I hadn't come back and been like, Alice, oh my God, I've just seen this woman and this, that, the other, and then actually had that conversation, because I didn't realise her skill set would complement mine so well. And then we just kind of jumped into this project based really on a gut feeling. We were new friends. And, you know, a year later, we've made something we're really proud of. So, yeah, definitely cultivating that community and working relationships with people, I'd say.
Yeah, collaborating with like-minded people.
Mm. Yeah, so I think often as well, it's like some of those surprising connections, as you say, that will like lead to the most exciting things. So just be like being open and listening and not necessarily expecting, oh, this is going to lead to my next job, or, you know, that like having a specific goal in mind, but just being very open to what might come. And definitely, I think making those connections, which I always found really, really hard. I always felt like networking was just like embarrassing, and I, you know, couldn't make small talk with people. But I think just putting yourself out there a little bit, and even if you don't think you've got anything to say, just go and listen to other people, listen to what they've got to say, and eventually like those networks will form, I think.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful advice. Looking at your career, Alice, and all the people you've worked with and the documentaries you've made for whichever company, what specific area or time of your career that you think has really shaped you, not only as an individual, but also your work and the path that you want to follow?
Probably like this last year.
Yeah.
Like I still feel like it's really weird to hear you describe me in those words. Like I don't feel like I'm there at all. The last year I started this project and made an independent documentary, which is doing really well now. It's like, you know, been a screen at BFI, and it's up for it's actually at Underwire, which is a female film festival in London, and it's up for 2 awards there, which is really exciting.
Congrats.
But no, when I made that, I was like, oh, no one's gonna watch this, you know, like, why am I doing this? And then also kind of still I've started directing in TV, but it's still really hard. It's still really hard to get people to give you those opportunities, even though I've now got work to show. And yeah, it feels like it's like a never-ending battle, really. But then I guess that's part of the process, and I should just learn to enjoy that, maybe.
That's what some people say. They're like, oh, you know, enjoy the path that you're on now. And I'm like, no,
no.
I want to be there.
Exactly.
You've spoken about some people, well, behind the camera predominantly. Why is it so difficult for women to find opportunities that are behind the camera? And do you have any advice for people who are facing those obstacles?
Yeah, I think there's a number of reasons. I think, well, firstly, there's just not that many people doing it. So it's like, well, you know, who do I look to? Who do I learn from? There's definitely a bias towards, you know, men being able to carry cameras and being more technically minded and all of those things. I think that's inherent. But I think also women carry that bias as well. I think we often don't think of ourselves as being capable. And I mean, really, it's not rocket science. I'm not an expert. I'm not a cinematographer by any stretch. But, you know, I know how to tell a story. And I just did that through just buying a camera when I was fortunate enough, you know, that I could. Just like a, you know, like a DSLR or whatever. And just started making really awful music videos, like really bad ones. That
really?
I recently did my website, and the guy like put loads on my, I was like, we have to remove all of those because no one can see
delete
them.
It from yeah. the internet.
But no, but that's what you do, and you make loads of really cheesy stuff, and it's like, and it's fun and playful and whatever. And you might think, gosh, no one's going to watch this apart from my mum. But actually, that's really valuable. You really learn from that stuff, I think. And yeah, I think just not being afraid of failure and messing up, and nothing's going to be perfect. Like, even now, God, I look at everything, and after I finish something, I can't watch it for at least 6 months because it's just, you know, just sick of it and think it's awful and see the mistakes. So I think that's normal. I think you just got to kind of do it.
Georgie, so your skill set is so varied and you've worked with a number of people. Let's go back to you presenting on Channel 103.
Oh my God. You've done your research.
Thank you. What has the journey been like since then to now?
Oh, it's long, arduous. No. It's been amazing because I get to work in my sole passion, which is music. So in that respect, it's amazing. And I've had so many incredible opportunities and I've worked really, really, really hard to make those opportunities and to kind of get my foot in the door at stations that I believe in, that I'm passionate about. And I'm so blessed, you know, and I have, like, even 4 days ago, I had one of those days of the crushing self-doubt that we all have. And I'm just like, and my friend just said, you know, think of all the brands that you've worked for, all the things, you know, that you've done. And it's like, yeah, no, I know. And you just have to kind of keep going with it. I think, the journey's been, it's been very slow, really. It's like little bit by bit, baby steps. And then 11 years later, it's like, oh, actually, no, this is my career. And I'm able, because I do so many different things, I'm able to, A, get so much variety in my life and work, but also I'm able to kind of just do passion projects now rather than having to do all of the other jobs that you kind of just do just to kind of pay your bills every month, you know? So I realise I'm very, very fortunate. But yeah, it's been a wild ride.
Yes, but it's taken you a while and time to build those connections with people to then get those opportunities. So you've turned a job that's full-time that you might not necessarily enjoy, but it's in the field that you're doing and it pays the bills to do the stuff on the side, which is now full-time.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm a bit like Alice, you know, I still feel like I'm not even close to reaching the big, big Everest-type goals that I've set or that I have kind of in my heart, things that I really want to do. We're getting closer. I'm at base camp.
That's exciting. That is exciting.
Chipping away at the coal face of broadcasting, like, someone!
Oh, gosh.
You know, but, you know, you just have to keep going, I think. And, yeah, if it's meant to be, it'll be. I hope that I'll be able to sustain a career for another 10, 20 years in broadcasting. I mean, you hope so.
Of course you will, yeah.
But you just don't know.
That's true. So, radio's a minefield.
It's so unpredictable. You can be in a job and think you are cushy and then 4 weeks later that show's gone, you know. I think we've all been there with that. I've been there with that, you know.
It's interesting what you were just saying about, like, the slow chipping away. And, like, I was thinking about exactly that today because it is that. I think I've only just realised that. Like, for ages I was thinking, oh, it's going to be like suddenly I'm going to have a big break and it's going to be this big monumental thing, or I'll make this big film and suddenly that'll be me launched and, you know, my career will be set. It's not like that. It's like just the really gradual small things that you do in little ways every day, you know. And that's what these films are like. They're never gonna, you know, break the internet, but they're just like moving towards the next thing and hopefully building a bit of a momentum and getting people interested in incredible, inspiring stories.
Well, it's definitely had that effect on me. Do you feel like you've made valuable or huge sacrifices in your life for your career, whether that's, you know, missing out on birthdays or social life or love life, or you haven't followed your love for travelling or something because of your career?
Yep.
Yes.
But in the last few years, I've kind of made those things work for me more. Certainly with the travelling thing, it had been 8 years and I'd just been working, always that person on the weekend. Sorry, guys, got to leave the party, got to go DJ, got to go to work, got to go do this, that, the other. And it did affect relationships, certainly, not feeling just the graft of it and kind of not necessarily being able to enjoy, I suppose, like disposable income and being able to just be like, hey, let's go on this extravagant holiday or whatever in those earlier stages. But now I'm lucky I can kind of make it work. And because I freelance, I have those months where I know January is dead. I work 2-3 shifts in January. Like, it doesn't...
Really?
It's dead. All of the voiceover, broadcast journalism, everything, it's just dead.
Wow.
So in January, I go away for the month and I go travelling and go somewhere new and have an adventure.
Nice. And so you come back refreshed,
yeah.
And also, you know, get cheap deals.
Exactly.
After Christmas, go somewhere in Asia for a month, yeah, or something. Yeah.
But that's after like a few years of figuring out, okay, what makes me happy and trying to achieve that work-life balance. And it can be really hard. And I, you know, I've just come off the back of we launched Superwomen, and I've been on the hamster wheel probably for the last 3 months. And this week is a week where I always say to my mum, I'm in development, because like your parents, I went to this freelance seminar ages ago, and it's like your parents and your family and your friends will be like, oh, you're not working this week.
They're concerned.
And actually it's like, I've been working solidly for 3 months. Like, I've not had a break, and now this is like in development.
Where, that's a good phrase. Yeah, I'm totally going
to
use
where
that.
It's like little bits and bobs, but it's just time to actually just reset and just kind of cultivate those ideas again and like have just a breather and like go to the gym and like sit
have
in a park
balanced
for an
meal.
Hour.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially it's festival season, right? So you must be DJing all around the place.
Yeah, which is amazing. But then it's like festivals into rolling work, and then like you just feel like, you know, I'm you know, it's all right. Going to DJ on top of a mountain in Bulgaria, like,
oh,
it's not too
mountains.
Shabby.
Yeah, my friend went there. She said it was amazing.
Oh,
it's incredible.
It's, you know, not too shabby. I'm not complaining. But yeah, you just have to kind of manage the, I think, just manage that balance.
I can't
and
do
just
that
some
though.
Balance. I know I struggle balance. With it.
No,
no,
I
Alice,
still haven't found
your head,
it.
Yeah,
okay. I'm like right in the middle of imbalance, mm-hmm. very much so. I'm actually in missing my brother's 30th. Next month for a shoot, and
it is tough.
Definitely still haven't found that balance. It's just I think you get to this point where it's like, oh, but like there's a spare day on the weekend and I could be doing that, and then that will, you know. And sometimes you do just have to just stop and just say, no, I'm not gonna like think about anything or do anything, and just, you know, actually take a break. But it's hard. It is really hard to allow yourself that time, I think, but it's really necessary, and I'm only just learning the value of that. But no, shoots, you know, are really full on when you're in them, especially if you're abroad. It's kind of 24 hours and you're traveling and you're just totally, you know, Georgie like was, if I was basically off the grid for the last shoot I was on, so I kind of left Georgie to deal with all the Superwomen things. And it's kind of fortunate that, you know, we can, like, it ebbs and flows a bit with our work, mm-hmm. that we can do that. But yeah, no, it is. It's difficult. When someone cracks it, let me know.
Yeah. You've got to have headspace. You've got to sometimes just turn the phone off. And, you know, I have done that a bit more lately, but only, you know, not enough.
Yeah, when I first started out freelancing, it was 2 years, and I think the most I'd done in a row was 32 days. And it's just different jobs.
You're going
mad. I do different jobs. Yeah, exactly, like you. So, yeah, in the end, you'd just be so exhausted mentally, physically, emotionally. You start crying at random stuff.
So when you freelance, you just say yes to everything.
Of course,
and then you're suddenly in that role of work where you don't get a break, and it's like, why did I... But then you're like, oh, well, I had to say yes to that, because then I had to say yes to that, because then that might open up another thing in the future, you know, and it just ends
so
up being...
Tough.
So, yeah, saying no sometimes is important, but it's really hard.
Last question, what advice would you give, or, like, a message you'd give to your younger self?
Probably to just give less shits and enjoy it. I think I was, like, really serious for a really long time. And that was probably good then, because it like spurred me on. But I don't know. Yeah, maybe just worry less about being perfect and being right, and just do it. Just bloody, you know, make something. And that'd be it.
Just get out there and just like go do stuff, and have confidence, I think, in ideas and I suppose like your worth. For ages I think I was a bit timid. In my early 20s, certainly for the last 5-6 years, I've made stuff. I've pitched shows to, you know, I pitched my Virgin Radio show, my new music show, and I had complete creative control over 4 hours of new music and booked my sessions and guests and everything. And so definitely from the last 5 or 6 years, I've really kind of hustled, but tried to get my ideas away. In my early 20s, I just was, I don't know what I was doing, I was sitting around waiting for like someone to give me a show, which doesn't work like that really. But also I was growing, I was kind of, you know, gaining experience on air, which like when I listen back, and I haven't for a long time, when I listen back to those early bits that I did on Six Music, God knows why they let me on air. All my intonation was wrong. I just sounded so weird and young and like just inexperienced. But yeah, just kind of grow a bit. And then I think when you get a bit older, you just get more confident to just be like, here's my idea, let's do this. What about this? And just be more okay with that. So yeah, and just, you do you, girl. always. Nice. Just like follow any passions, anything that you love doing, just do it. Because I've, you know, if I hadn't, and I've been thinking about this a bit because I was just in Germany doing a bike trip, and I passed my full license 2.5 months ago, and then we just rode. We were sponsored some BMW bikes and rode
fantastic.
From Berlin down to Theropolis, which is about an hour and a half south of Germany. And I just had this kind of like everything makes sense moment of like why I even got into bikes in the first place, and then had led to this is what I kind of had dreamed it would be when I started it. And I just went, why didn't I do this like a few years ago? But just the timing. But I think with that passion has come so much. Like Superwoman wouldn't have been born. I wouldn't have made so many new friends, and just generally for like the happiness of my soul kind of thing. So yeah, just get out there and just follow any passions you have, even if you're like the person with all the hobbies and it's a bit exhausting.
Thank you to Alice Smith and Georgie Rogers for sharing their own personal experiences and journeys in their chosen industries, but also empowering and inspiring others to follow their dreams. If you want to check out what Superwoman is all about, watch some videos or get involved, head on over to their website, superwomanhq.com. Thanks for listening to my 6th episode of Let's Go Kick-Ass today. And to my wonderful guests, Tony Humphreys, Johnny Payne, and Alice Smith and Georgie Rogers. Feel free to subscribe, comment, rate, and share. I'm Vicky Carter, and you keep kicking ass.